Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Anand Rathi Wealth Limited Q4 and FY 2023 earnings conference call. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Feroze Azeez, Deputy CFO, Anand Rathi Wealth Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you so much, madam. Good afternoon, and thank you everyone for joining the earnings conference call for the quarter and year ended 31st March 2023. Along with me, I have Mr. Rakesh Rawal, the CEO, Mr. Jugal Mantri, the Group CFO, Mr. Rajesh Bhutara, the CFO, Mr. Chethan Shenoy, Director and Head Product and Research, Mr. Vishal Sanghavi, Head IR, and SGA, our Investor Relations Advisors. Amidst geopolitical tensions, higher inflation, and higher interest rate environment, we have delivered a strong performance across all our business verticals. In FY 2023, our revenue grew by 31% to rupees 558 crores, and the profit after tax grew by 33% to rupees 169 crores. Our holistic approach has also aided us in achieving a strong AUM growth of 18% year-on-year and reached a number of 38,993 crores. During the last year, we have added 1,270 client families, a new record at ARWL. This clearly demonstrates the trust and confidence our clients have in our services. Our total client families as on 31st March 2023 stood at 8,352. On the relationship manager side, we have added 22 RMs on a net basis for the full year. Over the years, Anand Rathi Wealth Limited has believed in providing uncomplicated, holistic, standardized solutions to our clients that have helped us consistently deliver robust performance at Anand Rathi Wealth. For our flagship business, the private wealth vertical, AUM grew at 18% year-on-year. Despite the challenging environment, we have delivered strong performance across verticals. Our net flows for FY 2023 stood at 4,896 crores, a growth of 78%, and the net flows of quarter four FY 2023 stood at 1,180 crores, growth of 40% from the same period last year. This speaks of value which we have added to our clients. This growth also reflects the effectiveness of developing uncomplicated wealth solutions for our clients, as well as our competency of our teams. Our digital wealth vertical is a fintech extension of the company's proposition for the mass affluent segment. Also registered a growth in the AUM of 23% year-on-year to 1,151 crores, while the number of clients grew by 9% year-on-year to end at 4,240. Now I would request Chethan Shenoy to take us through the Omni business update. Chethan, can you step in?
Thank you, Feroze.
Thank you, sir.
OFA business is a strategic extension for capturing wealth management landscape to service retail clients through mutual fund distributors by using our technology platform. As on 31st March 2023, OFA has 5,677 mutual fund distributors associated and has assets under administration on this platform of rupees 92,174 crores. The board of directors have declared a final dividend of rupees 7 per equity share of face value of rupees 5 each of the company. That is 140% of face value. Total dividend for financial year 2023 stood at rupees 12 per equity share. This includes interim dividend of rupees 5 per equity share paid in October 2022. In the last one year post-listing, the company has outperformed its own expectations, and we anticipate our long-term commitment to offer the most efficient wealth solutions to our clientele will enable us to achieve 20%-25% growth in the years ahead. Thank you. Now I request Jugal Mantri-ji, our Group CFO, to take you all through the financial performance of the company.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Firoz Bhai and Chetan. Friends, despite short-term volatility, the mid- and long-term outlook for the Indian equity market seems highly promising. We have delivered strong financial performance across all three verticals. Our consolidated revenue for the quarter ended 31st March 2023 stood at Rs. 147 crores as against Rs. 115 crores in Q4 FY22, registering a growth of 28% YOY, while revenue for financial year 2023 stood at Rs. 558 crores as compared to Rs. 425 crores in FY22, registering a growth of 31% YOY. Our profit before tax for the quarter stood at Rs. 59 crores, registering a growth of 35% YOY, whereas profit before tax for FY23 stood at Rs. 228 crores, registering a growth of 36% year-on-year. Profit before tax margin stood at 40.4% in Q4 FY23 and 40.8% in FY23. Our profit after tax for the quarter stood at a healthy Rs. 43 crores, registering a growth of 23% YOY as compared to Rs. 35 crores in Q4 FY22. Profit after tax for financial year 23 registered a growth of 33% YOY and stood at Rs. 169 crores. Our PAT margin stood at 29.1% in Q4 FY23 and 30.2% in FY23. Earning per share for Q4 FY23 stood at Rs. 10.3 per share and for financial year 2023, it stood at Rs. 40.5 per share. Out of EPS of Rs. 40.5 per share for FY23, the company has proposed to pay 30% as total dividend, that is Rs. 12 per share. Coming to the private wealth vertical, for FY23, our flagship private wealth vertical's revenue grew by 31% year-on-year, which stood at Rs. 538 crores, while trail revenue grew by 23% YOY, which stood at Rs. 182 crores. Profit before tax for FY23 stood at Rs. 226 crores, registering a growth of 36% YOY, while profit before tax margin stood at 42.1%. Profit after tax for FY23 stood at Rs. 168 crores, registering a growth of 34% year-on-year, while profit after tax margin stood at 31.3%. Return on equity of our flagship private wealth vertical as on 31st March 2023 stood at a healthy 38%. With this, we will now open the floor for question and answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have a first question from the line of Lalit Dev from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, good afternoon, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So sir, the first question was on the revenue side. So like within the revenue, we see that the revenue has been driven from the distribution of our MLD products. So just wanted to know, like during the quarter, like what kind of a gross issuance rate did we do in this quarter? Like both primary as well as secondary. On the MLD side?
Before I hand over to Jugalji to give the precise numbers, Since the market in the last quarter, for example, started on 1st January from 18,100 to 17,300, and since the markets have been flat for the full year, is why you may want to say that the revenues have come from the MLD distribution. But if you look at it, our net mobilization on the equity mutual fund side, which is what will give us the trail revenues, was 900 crores in equity mutual funds, approximately. In the full year, we collected 2,400, 2,500 crores in equity mutual funds, whereas the industry lost 15,000 crores other than the SIP collections. So our net mobilization share in the trail generating business has been significantly more focused than the MLD distribution. But since the markets have been subdued, the revenues seem to be more skewed towards MLD business. But my gross mobilizations and net mobilizations have been extremely skewed towards the trail generating business so as to fulfill the commitment or an indicated commitment over the next few years to have 50-50 as the ratio between upfront and trail. Jugalji, if I can request you to give some more color to this.
Yes, Mr. Lalit, see, in Q4 FY23, that the gross issuance of non-principal protected structured product was 1,000 crore compared to 984 crore in Q3 FY23. But if you look at the net number, in fact, the redemptions were more because of the maturities. The net number was minus 407 crore in non-principal protected structured product for Q4 FY23. And for the mutual fund, equity mutual fund, the net mobilization was 1,004 crore rupees. For debt mutual fund, it was 213 crore rupees and other products 370 crore. So overall, for all the products, the net mobilization was 1,180 crore in Q4 FY23.
Sure. So, sir, this, like as you mentioned, this 1,000 crore, this includes both primary issuance as well as the secondary issuance, or this is just the primary issuance?
No, this is 1,000 crore is primary. The secondary number is 287 crore.
Sure. And so, the second question was on the, so like during the quarter, there have been several regulations which have been announced, that like basically the taxation on MLD part, then the second one was on the taxation on the debt mutual funds as well. So like with all these regulations coming up, coming into the quarter, like how has been the customer behavior towards these products, and like what are the initial signs that we are reading from the market right now?
Yes, there are quite a few questions intertwined into one. One is client behavior. Tax change, regulatory changes which are there for the quarter. So first is client behavior has been very, very positive towards Anand Rathi Wealth because we predicted this, clearly predicted this on pieces of paper and sent notes saying that this tax advantage for principal protected MLDs will cease to exist. Not even may cease to exist, we had said will cease to exist in the next few budgets. So that really helped clients not buy even a single principal protected 10% taxation MLD. The problem was MLDs, a few of those MLDs which got listed because of their principal protected nature were being taxed at 10%, whereas all the other debt instruments were being taxed at 20%. So we never issued any principal protected debt-like MLD. All our MLDs, 200 which matured, 1,700 which are expected to mature, 1,600 which are expected to mature, all of them are equity-like, non-principal protected equity-like. So clients could see the merit of, for us, for the years we have counseled them not to go for tax advantage as a prime purpose of an instrument's purchase. So that helped. Client behavior has become far more positive, and we are no more having to answer the same mundane question we've been answering for years, why we don't do listed, rated, principal protected MLDs. Now that question has suddenly vaporized, which was the most commonly asked impediment during the sale. Then comes tax efficiency. Again, debt funds have come into the gamut of Section 50AA, They have come under the gamut, and again, it again reiterates our stance that if you're taking the risk, there's no problem. So 35% plus equity allocations in any fund will not cover, will not be covered under 50AA. So that doesn't change too much, because our strategy on the debt side, because our clients are intergenerational wealth, we have collected a homogeneous group of clients, is why we have 8,400, not 80,000 clients. We have collected homogeneous clients of group of clients who have intergenerational wealth. And debt has a very large, very small role to play in intergenerational wealth. It's a shock absorbent for short-term volatility. So we have very small amounts in debt, and where we have a low cost, no credit risk, no interest rate risk strategy, so that doesn't get impacted. Regulatory changes have not impacted Anand Rathi Wealth, and there are a few more regulatory changes which have come which would have gone unnoticed. There's a PMS regulation change which has come in 2022, December 16th. That's one regulation which has come. AIF regulation which has just come 2-3 days back. All these don't impact us, because we, and there's one more regulation which came during the year, during the quarter, was the B30 commission going away. So all these don't impact us, because we have not used any upfront commissions of AIFs or PMSs or the B30 provisions to build a revenue stream. Does it answer, Lalit Bhai?
Yeah, yes, sir. Sure, sir. Actually, last question was that, like, since you mentioned that the open markets have become a little uncertain, and so in the equity schemes which we generally share with our list of investors, so like, have we changed any kind of a strategy over there, or we have a policy of like only giving out like 11 equity schemes. So have we made any changes in those schemes?
Yes, we have made some changes in the scheme. We do this exercise, a very thorough exercise, between Jan, Feb and March every year to see the validity of the schemes we recommend. There are 380 active schemes, out of which we had 11 schemes only. Our purpose of buying an equity scheme is to make sure on an aggregate 11 scheme level, we are able to beat Nifty by 2-3% or NSE 500 by 2-3%. So it requires immense amount of vigilance. Yes, there are some changes. Now we've launched our new model portfolio, which has 14 schemes instead of 11. We have increased the number of schemes because we analyzed client portfolios transaction-wise, external portfolios which are with competitors, and we realized that we win over 90% of the external portfolios, but there are some portfolios which beat us. They had more number of schemes, so we have increased the number of schemes to 14.
Sure. Thank you, sir. Thank you for answering.
Thank you for your question, sir.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Sumit Bhattacharya from MK Ventures. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I, Rakesh, Firoz, this Madhu Kela here. Both my colleague Sumit is also along with me.
So hello, Madhu.
Congratulations in this environment. I think over the last 1 year, amid all this volatility, you guys have declared fantastic results. I have, two, three points to make. One, in this overall tax environment, what has happened to debt mutual funds in terms of taxation? What has happened to MLD guidelines in terms of taxation? How do you see this business shaping up over the next 12 months or maybe over the next 2-3 year period also? Has it lost some sheen compared to past because of slightly unattractive taxation? I'm saying asset class as a whole.
Debt as an asset class, sir. Is that what you asked, Madhu sir?
Yeah, MLD, basically.
So MLD, now they've defined MLD as those which have principal protection. So the answer is yes, the 1.5 lakh crore industry, which ARWL had zero share in, that will become absolutely non-lucrative for HNI.
Okay,
we didn't have a share. We were always in the non-principal protected, unlisted, unrated MLDs because they give an equity-like return. But a lot of MLDs were only debt with a small little clause. So they were practically a bond with some outrageous clause saying that if Nifty went to zero, I will not give you a return. Right? So those were naam ke waaste MLDs. Those will definitely have an impact. That was almost, if I'm right, if my memory serves right, it's about 1,35,000-1,40,000 crore industry, sir.
So do you see that you gaining market share, at least that money which was going in all those MLDs, will this mean that part of that could come to companies like yours who have been selling unlisted MLDs?
Yes, Madhusa, that we are seeing, because because this was one thing which was competing with us, that competition has gone away. Out of our 8,400 families, by taking them through logic, we used to convince them that what we are saying is mathematical and logical. So most of our existing clients might not have too much intersection with that 1,35,000 crores, but there are a few, right? There might be 10-15% of our clients who would have had listed MLDs. They are seeking our tax advice also sometimes. So you're right, we might have some collateral benefit of that industry losing its sheen, sir.
My other question is, of course, what we are hearing, that the entire expense ratio is being discussed at the regulator, that it will come down meaningfully for the AMC, right? Whether now it will happen or not happen, hello?
Yes, sir, yes, sir. Very intently hearing you, sir.
Just one minute. Whether it will happen or not happen, we don't know. But supposing if something like what is being proposed had to happen, how will it impact our business in terms of growth, margins, everything? Because what is being discussed is pretty sharp.
Yes, Madhusa. There are about 6 to 7 points in the discussion paper which was floated. As for my friends in the industry are concerned. So one of them which has got implemented is B30 being abolished. First let me give you a context of how we look at it. We have not used any of the extra benefits, so it doesn't impact us. Why I'd like to say is, one thing which was the B30 we have not used, we have not sold one NFO. In spite of knowing several of our companions in the industry sold them, collected 3% in the first year as trail, we said no, we will not do an NFO because it doesn't make sense for the client to, in spite of having 380 old funds, buying a new fund, didn't make sense to us. So we have not used B30, we have not used NFOs, now we have not used not used smaller schemes just to increase our AUM. The 11 scheme model portfolio last year, 11 scheme model portfolio, the average scheme size was 15,000 crores. In the circular which SEBI has sent to AMFI and in turn to asset managers, they've said that let's have a AMC-based expense ratio. Even if that gets implemented, then my trail comes down by 2 paisa, which I simulated. Out of my trail commission today in the equity mutual fund is 1.11, that could come down to 1.09. If I look at all AMCs of the same scheme having the same expense ratio, was the biggest, hardest hitting item out of the 7 items written in that discussion paper, sir.
And Firav, how will it impact our future business if these guidelines were to be implemented? One is the trail commission coming down. How will it impact the future earnings?
Madhusa, because we have a model portfolio which only earns me 1.11, if I would have used all these provisions, I would be earning 1.4% trail. Because it is not in my client's interest, so I am currently voluntarily earning lesser because I have not used any of the provisions which are there. To come back to your pointed question, Madhusa, what will be the impact on the trail commissions in the future? I think minimalistic 2-3% if all of them get implemented. Because I've not got that 25 advantage is why it is not going away. So there will be several distributors who used to use those advantages. They will have an impact for sure. So it's an important point for a distribution fraternity because I've not used them in spite of having known of them. Is why the impact could be lesser. In fact, it will improve active funds performance, which will impact us positively because agar alpha banta hai, so because I am the third largest distributor, other than aggregators, other than Indian banks, I am the largest equity mutual fund distributor. It will impact me positively because performance BC spaces se badh jayegi, alphas. Jo main bahut,
my question is, Is there any particular reason why you guys have not looked at international markets as yet in terms of sourcing clients or even distributing products for, let's say, Indian investors into international markets? Just wanted to have your perspective.
But to be very honest, अगर 80-83 लोग की रिसर्च लोग लगा के भी इंडिया समझ नहीं आ रहा था, तो हमने ये सोचा कि भाई इफ यू डू एनीथिंग विच इज लिटिल मोर बियॉन्ड, बिकॉज वी लाइक टू हैव 20-30 पीपल डूइंग रिसर्च इन इंटरनेशनल मार्केट इफ नॉट मोर. सो एंड रिलेशनशिप्स गेट अ लिटिल डैम्पन्ड इफ यू मेक मिस्टेक्स. सो वी ट्राई एंड हैव अ किड ग्लव्स काइंड ऑफ एन अप्रोच टू आवर रिलेशनशिप्स. But Rakesh sir would be the best poised to answer this question, sir. Rakesh sir, can I ask you? I know aapka gala thoda kharab hai, that's why I have been doing the talking.
No. Madhu, basically the whole thing is objective-led. Ki profit 14% ki return banani hai. Hello?
Haji, I'm with you.
Yeah. And we have to get to 12 to 14% in the simplest way possible.
Sure.
Right, so if the simplest way possible means a certain proportion to Indian equities through the simplest mechanism, which is mutual funds and structured products and a little bit of debt, then that becomes the least distance path, right? Anything more complicates it. So if I add foreign funds or if I add foreign markets, it's complicating. Then it doesn't serve the purpose. So complication which does not serve the purpose, we avoid. And that's been our strategy right from the beginning. So that's the reason why we don't look at it. Plus, I think also Feroz said that anything that we do, we want to do deep researching and then take to the customers. And if I were to, take US or to take China or any other market, I just don't want to just do a fund just for the sake of it. I want to do it if there is going to be deep research, which means a lot of resources have to be put into it. A lot of resources putting, not serving a purpose, didn't make business sense to us. That's why we didn't do it.
My other part of the question, Rakesh, was, obviously NRIs and the people residing abroad is also a large community for Indian markets. I am assuming that Anand Rathi doesn't have a significant international presence. Any particular reason why we have not looked at it?
No. See, we have an office in Dubai, and we've got that now for the last 6-7 years. We've got very good traction there. So what we are doing with them is that we are saying, hey, bifurcate your monies into two parts. The ones that you want to invest in India and the one that you want to invest abroad. For the ones that you want to invest in India, we are masters. Instead of being head of trade for all markets, we are masters of one issue. And there is, there is a lot of attraction to India over the last, several years. The image of India has changed. And a lot of NRIs are showing interest in investing in India. So for that portion of the portfolio, which is significant, we have the full value of their money. And that's growing very handsomely in Dubai. And, we'll have, without having offices in the U.S., we have several U.S. clients. And I know I manage a few whose 90% of them are in India being managed by us. So we have about 10% of our book, which is NRIs. So we're not ignoring NRIs, but yes, you have a point that yes, maybe we could be a little more aggressive there.
Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you, Madhu. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Samyak Shah from Sameeksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Congratulations for this good set of numbers. Am I audible?
Yes, Samyak. You are.
Yes. So there is significant amount of increase in other financial assets, as we can see from cash flow. So is it like FDs, which is collateral against bank overdraft? And if so, then for what purpose such high amount of cash has been restricted?
Jugal sir, if I can.
Hello.
Hello. Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Samyak. See, what has happened is that if you recall in the month of February and March, the FD's interest rates have shooted up, and what we have done is that we have made fixed deposits of more than 1 year in the month of February and March. So as per the balance sheet classification, in case if we are holding fixed deposit in excess of 1 year, then it has to be shown in other financial assets, which was earlier part of cash and cash equivalent. So actually it is, there is a just movement of fixed deposit in other, from cash and cash equivalent to other financial assets.
Okay, got it. And my other question is that can we get to know bifurcation of net inflows as to how much is from existing clients and how much from new clients, so new families which we have added?
Jugal sir, would you want to take that one? So,
Mr. Samir, can you repeat the question?
Yes, sure. So, can I know the bifurcation of net inflows as to how much net inflow is from existing clients and how much is from our new clients?
I think, you see, this sort of classification we don't have about the AUM mobilization from the new clients as well as old clients. Reason being that our existing clients also, they keeps on like moving from one bucket to another bucket. In case if their AUM fall below 50 lakhs, then they get excluded from my active number of clients. But I still will work out and give it to you, Mr. Samir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Mayank Agarwal from InCred Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congrats for good set of numbers. My first question is on RM addition. We have added 16 RM. Now we have 293 RM. So how many of the new addition is from outside and how much is from, you know, the promotion of the AMs to the RMs?
Yes.
First question.
I'll just give you the split. But the net addition is 22, right?
Yes.
Vishalji? For the full year, the net addition is 22. Okay, and you would be also happy to note that last quarter when we declared our result, our regret attrition was 0. This quarter it is 1, that is 0.35% for this quarter. For some personal reasons, some RMs might leave, but we have been able to maintain a very, very low regret attrition number. Regret attrition defined as a person who's got more than 40 crores of AUM. After having come to 40 crores of AUM, if somebody left us, it would be called a regret attrition, and that was only one person in the quarter. And coming back to your question, lateral hires from the industry are
60%, 40% internal.
40% internal and 60% external.
Lateral
hires. For the last quarter, right?
Yes, this is for
Friday. So there would be also some, you know, client addition because of that outside hiring also, right? If I am right.
Sorry?
The 40% hiring we have done outside, they would also have bring some clients out of the newly added clients, if I am right. Is that we should look at or how?
Yeah, there will be, see, when a client, new RM comes, he adds about 10, 12, 14 clients. It's not very easy to move all the clients from the erstwhile organization. So it will be very difficult to bifurcate that when he joins in the first 3 months, 4 months, how many does he get? So over a period, he tries to re-establish, connects with his erstwhile organization's client. Yes, you're right.
Okay, and I want your perspective on the equity inflows. So the industry is witnessing, you know, kind of a muted inflows for the last 4 to 6 months. It could be higher interest rate or, you know, the muted performance of the market. So when you expect the equity inflows to return to the market?
See, the fact that equity inflows are not there may not be the best judgment. What happens is HNIs use different vehicles, right? Mutual fund has had very low inflows from HNIs. PMSs have had inflows. AIFs have had inflows. Now, AIF also is going to be starting a direct alternative, direct option. So then again, the mix between MF, PMS and AIF in most wealth management outfits is going to change. So coming back to this year, the total net outflow of HNIs is 15,500 crores negative. If you remove the SIP collections for the full year, right? So, and Anand Rathi's number is till February was 2,400, somewhere thereabouts. So we are positive, the industry is negative. To come back to your question, pointed question, Mayank, when will this become better? To my mind, it will become better because you've already gone through a 1.5 year time correction. You've gone through 1,000 points of price correction. In the same period from October 21, markets have not moved anywhere. They've added 900 rupees of earnings to their books, minus the dividend, of course. So I think there has to be the light at the end of the tunnel. That's point one. But you would be happy to note how a wealth management outfit can influence a trend in its own set of smaller subset of 8,400 clients. You would see that the last quarter Nifty was very bad, but our sourcing was the maximum in equity mutual funds. It is one thing to have academic faith that market niche hogi tab kharidenge. There is a, it's altogether a different thing to actually do that in action. So you would see that in quarters where Nifty averages lower levels, our net mobilizations increase. And that's when client performance comes. Right? So that's something which we take pride in. Like Jugal G said, the 1,000 crores of our total sourcing for the last quarter came in equity mutual funds.
Right. Thanks. That was really useful. Best of luck.
Thank you. We have a next question from the line of Dipanjan Ghosh from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Hope I'm audible.
Yes, Mr.
You are.
Ghosh.
Yeah. So just a few questions from my side. First, you know, a lot of the private banks and some of the boutique wealth managers have been guiding on expanding their presence in the 1 to 10 crore or 1 to 20 crore sort of a segment. So more from, let's say, a medium term, maybe a 5 to 7 year perspective, how do you see the competitive intensity increasing in the segment? Obviously, there is a pie expansion in terms of client penetration or new client acquisition, but also there's an aspect of competition increasing from some of these players. Second, I think from the cost perspective, obviously over the last few years, you have seen some improvement. If you can give some color on what sort of buffer or headroom do you see on the cost side from a medium-term perspective, where you can see some improvement out there. And also if you can split your overall expenses between variable and fixed, be it on the employer overall side. And lastly, one data-keeping question, if you can quantify the ESOP expense for the quarter and full year.
That's a lot of questions, Mr. Ghosh, so I might just miss any of them. So just you can pull me back into those ones. The first one you said about is the competitive intensity, right?
Yes.
See, the competitive intensity is not just about the number of players in the space. It's about number of similar players in the space. What we stand for is being mathematical, not product pushing, right? We have a strategy. We do it very uncomplicated. There is no wealth management outfit which would be able to survive without doing an NFO, without doing a PMS, without doing an AIF for 10 years. So we have acclimatized our clients to expect no entertainment, uncomplicated advice, not something new every quarter, right? So when you look at it, the industry does direct equity. Clients may not even know their IRR, forget their alpha, right? PMSs, they don't know their post-cost, post-expense alpha and IRR. Quite a few clients don't know. So we want to be guiding our clients on the basis of mathematics. So, and all other peripheral services, right? A guy does direct regular mutual funds with us, not just to remunerate me on mutual funds. He wants to remunerate me for the trust I created, for the tax opinions I gave or helped him source. He wants to give me a regular scheme because I've made his will, I've registered his will, I'm making codicils on his will. So there are several peripheral services. So for wealth management outfits to offer these services and do mathematically just a 1% equity mutual fund business, I don't see that will change too much because as of now itself, there are so many players. But not the real private bankers want to start in the ultra HNI segment, but we have the 5 to 50 crore segment, which Rakesh chose way back in 2007 as his preferred segment, because the DNA of those people is mathematical, professional. They don't like product pushers. They like somebody who can give him professional service. So, and we will traverse that as the industry evolves. And that's our...
Sure.
What was your next question, Ghosh, sir?
Second was on the cost part, whether you see some headroom from improvement and what is the quantum, and also if you can split between variable and fixed.
Yeah. Jugal, sir?
Yeah, Mr. Deepanjan, if you look at the overall cost structure which we have, out of 100 rupees revenue which we earn, see, our PBT margin is about, say, 42.5%, okay? So rest about 57.5%, that constitute my total cost. And out of that, if you will split it, that the operating cost, including employee cost, that is, say, about 46-47%, and remaining 10% is other incidental cost, which is other operating, business promotion, rental, and all these things. And even in case of employee, the split is between the revenue generating employee as well as the product operation or non-revenue generating employee setup is, say, between 2/3 and 1/3. So what we can say, as far as concerned with the increase in the volume of business, that the 1/3 cost, we are still capacitized to handle, say, another 50% volume of what we have been doing right now. And that will be a semi-variable cost. And the revenue generating employee, which constitute, that is directly variable cost. So if we overall, as long as we achieve, say, 42.5 to, say, 43 or 44% of the gross margin or the PBT margin, I think that is, we are very close to the optimal this thing, margin level, and the further scope of improving it is limited. That will be next driven by the volume and the commensurate increase in the cost. Does this answer your question, Mr. Deepanjan?
Yes, sure. And if you can just quantify the ESOP expense number?
That is very insignificant. I think in this quarter it was about 1.5 crore rupees. That was the ESOP expenses. There is no other, there are no other ESOPs which are outstanding. So in fact, that expenditure will also go away going forward.
And if I can just follow up on one of the points you mentioned in a previous answer, you mentioned that, you know, if the industry were to move to an company level TER from a scheme level TER, then the impact will be around 2 bps of going down to 1.09 from 1.11. So if you can give some color on how you kind of arrived at this calculation, or what are the inputs that you kind of baked?
Yeah, so what we did was, see, every asset management company, we had 9 asset management companies, 11 schemes. Okay, if every asset management company's average AUM of each of the schemes became their actual TR fixation number, for example, if I take the largest AMC, the biggest scheme could be 30,000 crores, right? If all of them were pegged to 30,000 crores, what would be the actual expense chargeable on the scheme which I am selling? Right, I am selling, for example, okay, let me not give you examples of asset management companies, but if I would be selling a 10,000 crore scheme in a asset management company which average AUM is 20,000 crores, will I get impacted there? In that asset management company, I'll get impacted. Now, I sell a very, very large scheme also in my 11 schemes, which you would have heard of me speaking on TV or somewhere, where you would have 50,000 crores, 40,000 crores in that scheme. In that AMC, I will not get impacted. So we went AMC by AMC, trying to pre-peg the TERs permissible as per SEBI slabs on the average and the highest scheme of that corresponding asset management company. Then did the math, then the drop was 3-4%. Then if you made some modifications to the model portfolio, the new model portfolio, said 2-3%. That's all.
Current, when you say average AUM, basically overall sum of AUMs divided by number of schemes, right?
See, but the one of the interpretations says that that's not the case. So I've also simulated it to the largest scheme. If all the smaller schemes of an asset management company now get charged only on the basis of the largest scheme, so there is some degree of interpretation there. Average may not be the right, because it's not become a rule, and I think that's put at bay, in my opinion, so far. So when it happens, we have to try and navigate that. And I don't think, if my model portfolio was so designed to get a 1.3% trail, which I could have very easily, the average AUM of my 11 schemes is 15,000. Because I am a client-centric organization, I will choose a scheme not because of a 2,000 crore scheme could give me more commission. The average scheme size being 15,800 itself implies that I didn't use the smaller schemes to bring my revenues up. If I would have done that, I would have been at a 1.4% trail. Then would I come back after this regulatory change to 1.1? So I could have enjoyed that 0.2, 0.3 more for some period of time, very well knowing it will go away. So I have not used that.
Got it.
Does it answer?
Sure, it does. I think thanks for the clarifications and all the best.
Thank you, sir, for your question.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Abhijit Sakre from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. One question, just a broad question on how we operate. So just some perspectives on what's been the level of acceptance, or what are your broad thoughts around moving towards a advisory-based or a fee-based model in terms of advising our client base?
So fee-based model, 2013 is when advisory regulation was introduced. There are about 10 circulars which have been published after that, circulars and discussion papers. We have not had to change our business model. We have chosen distribution. We will remain distribution till advisory. All products need to be on direct. Now, after 10 years of mutual fund going on direct, 2 days back or 3 days back, you read that AIFs are also going to have a direct option. Because a client portfolio has several products, insurance, AIFs, PMSs, mutual funds. Only mutual fund had a direct option. PMSs didn't have a direct option. So it's not practical. So that's why we chose a distribution model. 5 years from now, 10 years from when, now if all financial instruments could come on direct is when somebody can choose to go the advisory model or the distribution model and then give unbiased advice. Right? So that's the reason. And anyway, the advisory licenses have been surrendered by all wealth management outfits in October 2020. This is something. And now PMS platforms get used for charging a fee. So all advice, most of our companions in the industry surrendered their advisory license. If you Googled it, you'll find it. Does it answer, sir?
Yeah, got it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, we request you to restrict your question to one. We have our next question from the line of Varun Patani from Quant Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Congratulations on a great set of numbers. So my question was on selection of schemes. You mentioned you have 11 schemes and you might increase a few more schemes now. So what sort of criteria, except apart from maybe AUM size or something else, what criteria do you look at? Because most of the industry practice is looking at historical numbers like returns or Sharpe ratios or something like that. So as a customer or as a client, how do you explain it to them why you have gone for a particular mutual fund scheme?
So Varun, I can sometimes offline take you through the presentation from a client standpoint, but I'll just tell you in a nutshell. Firstly, we tell the client that don't evaluate each scheme independently. You have to evaluate the full portfolio. I don't take a mandate to get you the best 11 schemes. So the portfolio, you will always have two, three of those schemes out of the 11, 12 you choose, which will not do well. That's an expectation setting. Otherwise, the client is always going to get into individual schemes and it will be rest assured there will be two, three of them which will underperform and he will miss the woods for the trees. Point one. Point two, how do we choose it? We ran a regression model on 104 variables to check the correlation with as a lead indicator, and then we identified some 11 variables which have a significant correlation between the past variable and the future performance. So what are those 104? It's a laundry list of them, not those conventional sharp prayers only. There are several other variables. We check the correlations of them, and then we use regression to fit the coefficients of those differential equations. That is the statistical method. The second is we try and get into the scheme stocks in each of those portfolios, and we use our research to find out the overall basket's future potential. Just like most analysts give a target price for a stock, a basket of stocks also, we try and put rigorous effort to find out which is the portfolio which has the maximum headroom for growth and in turn price movement. That's the second. Third we do is we try and see, we rank our fund managers, the 152 fund managers are ranked in the chronological order of their decision-making capability, which we numerically measure using a proprietary formula. So I don't want to give that all on a call. But yeah, that's these are the three steps. And then doing all this just to make sure that we are able to beat Nifty by 2 to 3%. 9.5 years, we have run a model portfolio. Ever since Direct came, we said we will have to generate alpha and create our relevance. That's when we will be able to sustain a regular business for years to come, or if not decades. So in the 9.5 years, the audited performance of our model portfolio of 38 exits and 36 entries in the portfolio has resulted in 2.23% alpha over Nifty compounded for the last 9.5 years, is the outcome of our statistical evolving mathematical model for a choice.
Thank you.
Sorry for the monologue. Yeah. Varun, does it answer at least conceptually?
Yes, yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Aegis Lakhani from Unify Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the chance. First, just one question that, you know, from the current revenues in the PPD, the way you reported, out of your 141, 47 is trails. So that's clear. So the balance 95, how much of it comes from the upfronting of the MLDs? Could you quantify that? That's just a query I have. And the second one, actually, if you could quantify this, if it's possible.
Yes, yes, surely possible. Jugal sir, if you can say that. So a reasonable portion of that will be MLD, primary, secondary, and some broking income, some things which are generally there. And
yeah, so out of that, like 91 or 91 and a half is from the MLD and rest is from other products.
Perfect. And Firoz, you mentioned a couple of times that, you know, your growth is, you know, in the MF has, you know, been 2,000 ballpark crores and the industry has had minus 15,000. So could you just tell me what is exactly driving that and what do you think are the growth drivers for that in FY 23, 24 and 25?
So measurement is driving that. Now, if a client came to me, or if we went to a client, we try and find out transaction-wise alphas of his over Nifty. Most distributors don't give this number. On a specific day, now let's assume a few days back, I just met a large client who had done 426 entries into mutual funds and about 121 exits into mutual funds over the last 4 years. So I take the transaction information, put that on an Excel sheet, compute if he bought and sold Nifty on those specific dates, would he be richer or poorer? If he is poorer, he has underperformed Nifty and he doesn't even know. Most people don't even have the exact transaction-wise alpha. So we analyzed last 5 months, we analyzed 239 external portfolios, transaction-wise, no approximation, because Nifty moves 1% every day. If you have to measure alpha, you have to measure it on the same day if I bought and sold Nifty. Out of the 239, about 170 of them didn't outperform Nifty in spite of being in active funds through other distributors. 219 of them couldn't beat my model portfolio. 20 of them have beaten my model portfolio. So I learned from the people who beat me. The 219 clients who underperformed my model portfolio on a transaction by transaction basis, that's the crux. Then I go to them and say, sir, you may go direct, You might think that you have saved some cost, but your revenue has dropped far more than your cost. That's why you underperformed Nifty by 3% in spite of saving 0.5% or 1% on cost. Then I am able to move even a direct client. Large direct clients are moving to regular. So measurement, which we started lately, mathematically exact same precise measurements is helping us establish that we are great distributors rather than in English, but in numbers.
Thank you. I request you to come back in the queue for further questions. We have our next question from the line of Worship Shah from Envision Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my question. Just from a reporting perspective, it would be better if you could report maybe some average AUM for the quarter, if you know, it make it easier for us to calculate yields. I mean, I'm sure internally we do that exercise, right? As the class was.
Great suggestion.
Okay. And on the MLDs, so we are completely unimpacted by any regulation, taxation change, right, regime, because we are non-principal protected?
In our belief, we are positively impacted by that change, because that's what we called out, saying this will happen. So from a taxation standpoint, the answer is yes. We don't get impacted. And that belief gets solidified because debt funds with 35% equity also don't get impacted. So the Section 50A basically says if you're taking the risk, no problem. If you're not taking the risk, please don't take indexation and long-term capital gain benefit. That's why debt funds with more than 35 in equity are exempt from 50A. Does it answer?
Yes, yes, thank you.
And all our products are risk. They can also lose full capital if Nifty became zero. So they're more equity-like.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Pallavi Deshpande from Samiksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thank you for taking my question. So just a small one here on the NBFC that backing the structured products, which is, I understand it, you know, into G-Secs, derivatives, and a small amount of loans. We just want to understand what's the yield on the loans, our loan book there.
Jugalji, you may be equipped to answer this one, the yield on the loan book.
So that is a question related to NBFC, but I am sure that on the NBFC front, whatever lending which has been done, the average yield which they are earning is about 11.5% for the loan against sales portfolio, and for mortgage and construction finance book, the average yield is in excess of 13%.
For 1-3?
Yes.
The second question would be on what would be the average age of the clients that 3,500 clients, what would be the average age?
Pallavi, sorry, average age of?
Of the client, yeah, of your client.
The average age I can't tell you, but I'll tell you one number. 63% of the clients have finished more than 3 years. 37 are less than 3 years.
Right.
Okay, in our belief, when a person goes through one cycle of 3 years, then he's a mature relationship with us.
Right. I was asking the age.
You're not speaking of the vintage with us, you're speaking about the age. Okay, you've not measured that.
50 years, 20 years, yeah.
No, sorry. 50 years, 60 years. The actual age, right? That's what you asked.
Actual age, yes.
Okay, I'm so sorry. I misunderstood you. I thought the vintage with us is what you were looking for.
If you could tell me how many of them would be, you know, higher than 60 years old.
Okay. Rakesh, sir, you want to take that to break the monotony of my voice? And
I have a precise number, but my experience is that it would be close to about 40% would be higher than 50-55.
Right. So that's why I was just relating this, the debt funds that are going to be, you know, becoming more unattractive in the whole scheme of things. Do you see money then shifting? Would you be looking at within your allocation shifting more clients to equity and or...
What we have found is that people with 50, 55, 60 years have the same aspiration to do well and earn 12-14% return as maybe with a guy of 30 years of age. This is a misnomer that when you are 60, you are relegated to a old age near death bucket. You know, there's a lot of life still left. I'm 67. So, you know, so we're very comfortable with equity, unlike the perception. I see a lot of young people put money in deposits. Hello?
Yes. I mean, but money shifting to FD, it's just like you have put, you know, your money into an FD, the company has, right? So, that's no, why there's a shift expected from debt funds to...
I'm just saying... Sorry, sir.
You were speaking. I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. Please go ahead, sir.
No, so I'm basically saying that if a person has a 12-14% aspiration, any client, whether 60, 65, 50, 80, then there is a mechanism to do that which involves a certain degree of equity. So it's not about the age. It is about what objective that person has. And the point I was raising was that it doesn't make sense to have a 6-7% kind of objective when you have inflation of 5-6%. So that's why many people have chosen 12-14%, which is, and they get comfort over it, you know, over time in equity. So age profile, at least in my experience, doesn't have a correlation to what kind of equity exposures they have. I don't know if that answers it, but at least my experience tells me that it doesn't have a correlation.
Mm-hmm.
So you can add to that.
Right, that was very
interesting. I'd like to add to that, Pallavi.
Yeah.
What happens is, with age, earning potential reduces. A person who is not financial free, see, the present value of all the HNI's goals is less than his current net worth. Then he has attained financial freedom. If he has attained financial freedom, then he has intergenerational money. So if I am 80 and I am not going to be using 35 crores, for example, it is going to be dependent on who is the karta. I might be let's assume I am 80 years and this money is in the trust of a benefit of my three grandchildren who are 18 years age. Will my risk appetite be dictating the allocation or the 18-year-olds who are actually the beneficiary of this money? What do you think, Pallavi?
Yes, I got my answer.
Right? So when we look at this perception, it is coming because 99% of India is living hand-to-mouth. They are not able to fulfill the goals of their lifetime. But we have collected a homogeneous group of those guys who if they want to achieve all their goals, they will still be left with money. That's why Rakesh sir is only implying return objective, not retirement objective. He's saying 12-14%. He's not saying bachonge padhai, he's not saying retirement.
Right.
You understand what's the difference between ARWL and 99% of India is operating with the same mentality which you said. Because budhape mein kamane ki kshamta kam ho jati.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We have our next question from the line of Prayesh Jain from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Hi. Firstly, a question on the client addition trajectory that we've seen. It's kind of on the weaker side when we compare it what we have been doing in the past. I see that, you know, generally in whatever numbers, reported numbers we have, even in last year Q4, that number used to be on the lower side. So first of all, is there a seasonal trend in terms of client acquisition trajectory wherein you kind of get into some slowdown or that sense?
No, Prayesh, if you look at, when you look at client addition, the number which you would be looking at is net.
Mm.
What happens is, if a client's market value falls below a certain threshold, we stop counting him as a client. When the markets fall, we have some degree of outflow, not that the client has gone away. Right? Clients, mark to market has brought him beyond the threshold which we like to see. If you look at gross additions, it will give you a true picture. Let me give you the gross additions. Okay. In the first half of the last financial year, we had 1,230 gross additions.
Okay.
and in the second half we had marginally lower 1070 gross addition.
Okay.
Because the market in March 31st closed significantly lower, right, then the December number of 18,100, some of them would have slipped lower. Now the beauty is, of course, there is a 5-10% lower in the second half than the first half. But the quality of addition, the client who started in the first half gave us 91 lakhs average to begin with. The client who gave us money in the second half started with 1.45 crores as an average. So the, as we have become a listed entity, we are getting popular, we are becoming more trustworthy because there is a perception attached to a listed company of governance and transparency. So people are ready to cut bigger and bigger checks as we progress. So if the quality of acquisition has improved, marginally you are right, in the second half there was a marginal dip relative to the previous half. But if you compare it to the previous year, we have had a gross addition increase significantly.
Okay. And just a question on the employee cost. You know, you mentioned, so when you, how do you account for the variable cost? So it's on a quarterly basis, you forecast for the full year and then apportion it during the year, do you account it in a, one particular quarter? How do you do that?
Sugandhi, if you can understand the problem.
See, the incentive, the larger portion of the incentive is accounted on a quarterly basis. Okay, but there are certain incentives which are like add-on incentive linked to the achievement of certain threshold limit. Okay, that we come to know in the last quarter only, that whether every any individual RM who has crossed a particular threshold, and because of this there is some incremental incentive which is getting accruing to him over and above the incentive which has been provided for. So that is why when we are finalizing the annual accounts, that the assessment of the incremental accrual to any employee on account of incentive, that gets computed in the last quarter. And that is why you will see that in fact the employee cost for the Q4 is higher by say about 5.5 crore rupees. In Q4, that is on account of that incremental incentive, but you can say that largely about 90 to 95% of the incentive that gets computed and accounted in respective quarter, and the remaining 5 to 10% of the incentive which is add-on, that gets computed and accounted in the final quarter.
Thank you. I would now like to hand the conference over to management for closing comments. Over to you.
Jugalji?
Yes, please. So, I take this opportunity to thank everyone for joining on the call. I hope we have been able to address all your queries. For any further information or clarification, kindly get in touch with our IR head, Mr. Vishal Sanghvi, or CFO Mr. Rajesh Bhutra, or Strategic Growth Advisor, or Investor Relations Advisors. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of Anand Rathi Wealth Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.